It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is Time Enough Podcast.
Hello, welcome to Time Enough Podcast. It's where we talk about episodes of The Twilight Zone and beyond. This is Matt here. We're doing a double header coming back from last week, although only about 2 minutes in our time, is Tilly and Susan Bridges. Hello, thanks for coming in again.
Hello, thank you so much.
Twice in a row, it's like it's The Twilight Zone.
Whoa. It is.
Whoa.
There's the music. Okay.
Yeah.
But both of you, just to reiterate, are some fantastic sci-fi writers. I still read Kill Switch last night, but yeah, it's a week later for everyone. So go back a week and you can hear it. do you ever watch Mr. Show?
No, I don't believe we've seen that.
Okay, there's this one sketch. It's just making me think of that with the pre-taped call-in show, and it has David Cross. So he's live. No, he's not live. What you're seeing is last week's show that's being aired now, but you are supposed to call in with a different topic. And it just shows him over the weeks like breaking down and going nuts because everyone keeps calling in about the wrong topics. He's like, yeah, my grandmother's been having problems with her cat. Oh, that's the elderly. No, I think it's the cat. No, it's your grandmother, because that's what the topic is this week. So anyway, that's convoluted and all that. So let's talk about The Twilight Zone. That makes way more sense. Today's episode is Susan's choice, which is A Thing About Machines. We were talking about how for all of us, we're rewatching the show and are finding quite a few we'd never seen before. This is one I'd never seen before. And I was like, why have I never seen this one before?
It's definitely one where you're like, I would remember seeing this one.
yeah, really. So I definitely enjoyed it. So you were having your run of the series. Was this first time for both of you, or?
I feel like maybe I have a vague recollection of seeing it once before, but a long time ago, like not recently.
Yeah, I didn't remember the episode or the story, but I feel like I had a vague memory of the like floating electric razor coming after him, which was so amazing.
I'd love that.
It was so great.
I put in my own notes that like if this were a movie, which honestly I could probably watch this guy get chased around by machines for an hour or so anyway.
Right.
The electric razor is what would be on the poster, you know. They can't do the car because they gotta save that for Christine, right?
And plus, it's really expensive. You don't want that car to end up in the pool, you know. So
yeah, I'm not like a giant car guy, but I know it wasn't a Rolls Royce, was it? I don't know. Yeah, I'm not enough of a car person.
I don't even know what it was. They said it was expensive, so I believe them.
That's pretty much it.
It looked fancy.
It did look expensive. So someone on Twitter is going to come in and scream and like, how could you not know this classic model of car? But we don't.
Sorry.
A little bit of trivia for this episode. The air date was October 28th, 1960. But the bumper at the end fully dates it with a bit of low-budget animation telling you to contribute to the political party of your choice because you were supposed to vote for Kennedy or Nixon the following week. We've got a Serling script with David Orrick McDermott directing. I cannot tell you much about the director. He's got one of those red name links on Wiki, right? Which leads to nowhere. So
yeah.
But good job on this one, David. I think I've already betrayed. I liked it quite well. Mr. Bartlett Finchley is actually Richard Hayden, a British actor who focused mostly on comedic roles. The ones that really catch the eye, though, are not necessarily comedies. We have the 1945 version of Agatha Christie's, and then There Were None, the version of Mutiny on the Bounty with Marlon Brando, The Sound of Music and a Bit Part, and Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein. come on. So if someone says that, that's how you say it, that's how you say it, right?
Right. That's how they, that, I mean, we've been schooled in that one for sure.
Yeah. You don't necessarily scream like Gene Wilder at people, but you can. This guy does in this episode. Barbara Stewart played Edith Rogers. She's best known for a notable guest spot in 1961. I didn't write what show it was on, and now I've forgotten. Oops. Perry Mason. It was Perry Mason. Okay. But I've got to mention, she also made appearances in Airplane and a movie from 1997 called Pterodactyl Woman from Beverly Hills, which I haven't seen it, but when you see that title, you have to put in your trivia.
Yeah, I kind of want to see that now.
Right?
Bernard Philip Offner, better known as Barney Phillips, was the TV repairman. He also played Sergeant Ed Jacobs on the original Dragnet, as well as a later Twilight Zone appearance in Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up? He might have been the Venusian. I don't remember. Okay.
Well, plenty of accolades for everyone all around.
Rightio. Susan, here is that prologue. You can do Rod Serling. I've had people do redneck voices. Any way you want to read, it's fine.
All right. This is Mr. Bartlett Finchley, age 48, a practicing sophisticate who writes very special and very precious things for gourmet magazines and the like. He's a bachelor and a recluse with few friends, only devotees and adherents to the cause of tart sophistry. He has no interests save whatever current annoyances he can put his mind to. He has no purpose to his life except the formulation of day-to-day opportunities to vent his wrath on mechanical contrivances of an age he abhors. In short, Mr. Bartlett Finchley is a malcontent born either too late or too early in the century and who, in just a moment, will enter a realm where muscles and the will to fight back are not limited to human beings. Next stop for Mr. Bartlett Finchley, the Twilight Zone.
All right.
That was a hard one.
The whole intro is just like, this guy's a jerk.
And he,
no one likes
the
him.
Whole episode is, this guy is a right? jerk, honestly.
He has no redeeming qualities.
Let's literally zero. About.
Yeah, well, you know, we talk about, you got 25 minutes sometimes. Sometimes you paint with a broad brush.
Yep.
And there are episodes of the Twilight Zone that make a very rich portrait in 25 minutes. I think the last episode we did that, yeah. Whereas this one is just like way and hey, if we got something deep, that's fantastic, but I thought this episode was just like fun.
And also it's another very small episode with very few actors, yeah. And only like very small locations. I mean, we're mostly in the house,
yep,
and then yeah. outside briefly, and that's about it.
Yeah, they had to hire those extras for those two scenes. But yeah, a little bigger in the last one, but yeah, definitely on a smaller scale.
But yeah, it starts out with him being like absolutely horrible to this repair person.
Yeah.
Like really horrible.
He's
like
so awful.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, and I love that the repair person was just like, well, you completely ruined your stuff. You keep breaking everything and then you want me to fix it. And that's a funny thing. It's like, why would you even want it fixed? Like, you're just thinking like,
that's a good point.
Why?
If you hate it so much.
If you hate it and you broke it, then why didn't you just ship it all out the front door? But
because he wants to seem
hip and with it.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of
appearances.
Sense. Right. Because basically he's like old. He feels like everything is too much.
Yeah.
It's too modern.
Why did he have such a fancy car? Appearances.
Probably. Like, I don't even know if he can drive it. And
he drives it up at the beginning.
And then he's like horrible to his secretary as well.
Yeah.
And actually she really steals the show with her. She's like really great.
She's trying her best to like connect to this guy without
she's
wanting
just like,
to
look, man.
Like, but yeah, connect him the right way. It's like, if you're going to be cool, but you just keep. I mean, he is a cartoon yeah. character. I thought like a few more turns in the screw and we'd have, like, you know, basically Edmund Blackadder here.
I think like from my perspective, like I have worked in technology and tech, and there are people like that.
I mean, just hate technology.
They either hate it, they can't understand it, they don't want to understand it.
Really?
I mean,
fascinating.
The first thing I thought of was, like, when I worked at Warner Brothers, like, I was part of a whole thing to replace phones, like, across the whole campus, like, and this guy got excited and broke his phone on purpose so he could get a new phone. But we couldn't do it because, like, we were going from analog phones to voice over IP phones, which are like internet phones. So, like, we had to switch out the internet stuff. We had to switch out switch and all these things. And so it was like building by building. It wasn't just based on this phone is broken. Mm. So he broke it. And then we replaced it with the exact same old phone because we couldn't replace it with a new phone yet.
That's very much like this episode.
Right.
Like,
so that's one of the things I thought of right off the bat, because it is funny. And yeah, and I used to have to train people on using, like, a desk phone. And today, like, you get a lot of very young people coming in, you know, working on shows, and they don't know how to use a desk phone. They've never used a desk phone.
Right, because it's always been...
because they have a cell phone. They're mobile. Like, why would I... Yeah. What is this? How does this work?
That's funny.
I think we... one thing I would have mentioned is he does destroy the clock and take it out of the house, and it keeps working because he's that crazy.
He does. And the television that he broke. Yeah. And the phone too, I think the phone. Yeah. That works. Too,
so
even though he ripped it out of the wall. Yeah.
I mean, he's deep enough in the zone. All this stuff keeps working. So but I think most of us have some machines that we just don't or do not get along with, you know.
Every printer.
Printers. Yeah, yes. I'm notorious at work for screaming at printers, and I never scream at work. So the other one
is the worst.
I was what was I trying to do? Oh, it wanted me to change my password on my iPhone, but it changed my password to one of my password and all that sort of stuff, right? And then it wanted to send me to my email, and then it wanted a password. And there, to a certain point, I started screaming obscenities at my phone, and my daughter and my wife in the next room. And she's like, what did Dad just say? Nothing. He said nothing. Don't remember the word he just said to the phone. But I don't know. The thing is, when... I wasn't, like, angry doing that. I was kind of having fun getting that angry at my machine. This guy has no fun, Mr. Bartlett.
No, he does not.
He has no fun with it. I mean, of course, he does have the machines quickly telling him to just get out, which is creepy. But a good time to take a short vacation?
Yeah, maybe.
It does show his ratcheting anxiety, and I think that is a lot of what this is really about, like, anxiety about society moving forward.
Without him.
Technology moving forward, and he can't keep up, or doesn't want to keep up, or resents that he has to keep up.
Yeah, because it's interesting if you think about the age of the character he's playing. When he would have been born, none of that technology would have existed. And
exactly.
That's a lot of change to go through in your life. And change is hard for almost anybody to adapt to. It can be, right? So he's not adapting well.
I know. And even in our lifetimes, technology has gone immensely forward. Like, right. Things have changed so much. So it definitely makes sense to have a character that's like, whoa.
But it's not just the technology, right? Because he's awful to humans too. He's just an awful person.
It's true. But I think all of that comes from his anxieties about, you know, especially because they kind of describe him as this guy who, it seems like, used to be the guy who told everyone, you know, this is fashionable.
Right.
This is interesting. Yeah. This is what's going on. We're in the know.
And society.
And now he feels like, I'm not in the know anymore because I don't understand any of this.
Right.
And so it's like he's losing that place. And so he's just lashing out at everyone because he doesn't go to therapy.
He should, like, have therapy with a chat bot. See how that goes.
Although, you know, it's like, I love how absurd the episode is with all the machines. Like, I love a little bit of absurdity, and it's really funny, and then the ending's really dark. So I love that too. I love the juxtaposition of all of that, even though you're like, oh my God, like, wow. They made sure you don't like him, so you don't feel so bad when he dies. Like, but it's just like, yeah, I like,
does he die at the end? I didn't
yeah, he's that. Dead. He's really? At the bottom of a swimming pool.
Oh, that's right. He falls.
And they don't
the
even
pool.
Know why he sunk. To
he
the
didn't
bottom.
Even try to. He didn't even try to go up.
That's
yeah.
right. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
the car chased him into
the
pool.
The car chased him into the pool, and they're like, maybe he had a heart attack. I don't know.
I'm sure Sam Raimi was into the Twilight Zone. Well, not 100%. Pretty sure, because I just felt like one. This watching him get tormented is a little bit like watching Bruce Campbell get tormented in Evil Dead 2 specifically, and Army of Darkness. And I was just thinking, like, man, what if Raimi's kinetic weird camera work was doing the second half of the show? I mean, they did a great job for 1960s television. No criticism, but I was like, what if you had kinetic modern camera work and had all this insane machine stuff going on?
But no, they just pulled a razor with a little wire.
And that's
which
great.
I also loved. Yeah. Yeah. It was yeah. just perfect. Chasing him down the stairs.
Yes.
Well, I'll just read this directly from my notes, which is, to be fair, I'm terrified of electric razors. My wife once tried to use one on me, and I just flipped out. And she was like, ah, stop joking. I'm like, no, I'm flipping out. Like, I couldn't wow. handle the electric razor. And we live in kind of a generational house. I mean, the in-laws, there's a family, the traditional house, they do farming. So everyone gets their space, but we also get the benefits of a generational house, which is nice. But anyway, the point is, you know, when my father-in-law uses his electric razor, I'll just like quietly leave the room usually because I just can't stand the noise. It's weird. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, that's one, maybe the reason I like this episode so much is because the electric razor is like almost the main henchman, I guess. The car would be the big boss, right? The car yeah, is the right. boss battle. this may be a Blu-ray thing, but I was just like, hey, I'm going to look for the stunt driver. And I did find the stunt driver.
We could see him too. We watched it on Paramount Plus, but you could see him like leaning over sideways, dressed in all black.
Yeah, we're watching them all on Paramount Plus. And it's been really great.
And I think he had like some pantyhose on his head or something. So
probably.
Again, it's charming. It's like they I don't know. I guess you could radio. You couldn't stunt drive a car like that and radio control it. So yeah, that stunt work was pretty impressive.
Yeah. But also, if you remember, like that this was all broadcast in standard definition where you were probably getting some interference and on really small televisions, no one was going to see that.
Exactly.
So stuff they could get away with then, now you can see the seams.
Really, a lot of the stuff they did was super innovative. Yeah. So it's all really interesting to me. Like, I love practical effects. Like, are my favorite thing, and I love models blowing up. Like, that is my favorite thing in the world. Like, I still think nothing looks as good as actually blowing up a model.
Yeah.
One of my favorite all-time special effects is in the 1960 Time Machine, the destruction of London by a volcano, which it's like, technically they're terrible effects, they don't look realistic, but there's so much glee in them that there's no way they were going to make that work in 1960, and they didn't, but they got an A for effort, and it's so much fun watching them try, you know?
Right.
So yeah, the fact is, no one's going to see it. It's going to be on, you know, like, you know, old school television. Yeah, of course. You know, they know we'd be watching this on nice streaming services and Blu-ray. So,
yeah.
So now it's just fantastic. Again, Star Trek, you know, that's all been upscaled, and now you're like, oh yeah, there's some, that costume has some problems.
Oh yeah.
You can see the cracks in the set, and you know, because it was never meant to be seen that way.
Yeah, and their little gold cuff braids look pretty cheap.
yeah or you can see where the makeup stops at their shirt line.
I
think it's all of season 1 and 2 of The Next Generation. You can see all of like Riker's chest hair coming out the top of his uniform. You can see where Data's makeup doesn't go all the way under his collar.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Jonathan Frakes was a virile man.
I think the first time I had someone really noticing the upscale thing, you know, this was the early 90s, so it took IMAX for that. But my dad and I went to see the IMAX Rolling Stones concert film, and when we were leaving, my dad was like, I could count Mick Jagger's nose hairs.
Yeah, nobody needs that.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't.
That's right.
We don't need to see that much.
We can, but should we?
But should we?
To be fair, it was a good experience. I just thought it was funny that see the upscaled stuff, sometimes we really do focus on the kind of ridiculous details, like the nose hairs, or like you said, Data's, you know, makeup doesn't make it all the way. So
yeah.
Just call out, that was, you know, Chekhov's television. It was, well, the repairman's like, you smash it. It's like, there it is. It's like, well, this television's getting smashed before the end of this episode for sure.
Yep.
And that, oh, what, and it paid off when he did finally smash it. That was great.
It was pretty spectacular.
All of the destructive elements, I enjoyed them. Yes. Yeah. It was really fun.
And now I wonder, this is maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like, is this like the dawn of a sentient machine or AI? Because they can only send him this one message. Like, maybe if they could, like, if they could explain their disdain for him, like, in a little more detail, maybe they get it, or he'd like kind of understand, gee, I really should get out of here. He does have a big, nice house, so obviously he doesn't want to just like abandon it. But yeah, what was your take on this, you know, quote unquote AI?
Well, if so, then which machine started it?
He started it, because he was the one that was always, he would get fed up at the machines and like break them and stuff.
Maybe it started with the television, because, you know, when the repairman's there, yeah, he says, you took all the wires out of the TV.
Right. So he's been damaging.
He has things. Been abusing.
He started it.
These electronics. He started it. They ended it.
Yeah.
That's a great tagline.
What's
don't like, start none won't be none. Buddy.
It's kind of like in
Star Wars. The typewriter too. I mean, that doesn't have any power.
It was an electric typewriter.
Was it? No.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, he's got the phone completely unplugged and still talking to him. So
yeah,
that's true.
So there's some kind of magic going on.
Yeah, it is magic.
I mean, technically you could run an analog line against any kind of wire
at the time.
Any kind of metal.
So
if it was touching a metal, I know.
Stop trying to science this. It's not going to work.
I teach small children. They're sometimes talking on phones that are not connected to anything.
Well, there's a whole episode about that.
Yeah, true. Oh, yes. Good point. Well, they're usually using the paper cup one I made for them, but it's a paper cup. That's a real phone. I haven't gotten that up. I mean, I've seen it, but I haven't watched it recently. So that's the joy of having a, my series run through is going to probably take 4 years. So snail speed.
Yeah. You don't really know if it's the machines have actually risen up or if this is all in his head. You know, you don't.
No, they have, because how else would the car have been by the pool with them?
But then, you know, there was that scene earlier with the car that had rolled away. So it's like they made it be like it could have just been
all in his head.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like that was their nod to it being like, maybe it was just a random weird coincidence with the car and he was imagining the other stuff.
It was a weird coincidence. The car chased him around the neighborhood.
Well,
that could have been in his head.
It rolled away first, right? And then the police came to the door or something.
I don't remember.
That's yeah.
Maybe.
So that's why I kind of feel like they tried to put some doubt in there.
I see.
That's what I think they were trying to do.
Maybe it's like a meme I saw where it's, you know, like you're washing the dishes and you accidentally spill like a little bit of water on yourself, right? And the meme was like, this is what it looks like. So there's someone like, you know, spilling a little bit of water in their lap or whatever. And then it was like, this is how you see it, you know, showing like a tsunami, you know? So maybe the car is rolling down the hill and he's like just in his head getting a full on chase scene.
Right. Yeah. That's what I interpret it to be.
That he is so paranoid about his hatred of machines that he invented this in his head.
Yeah. That his anxiety just got out of control.
Okay. That's an interesting interpretation.
That's a great thing. Yeah. Both of them sound fantastic. It's like, I want to agree with that. No, I want to agree with that one. Huh? They both work. So like, I guess at the end of the day, yeah, this one, I'm going to probably fall down on the it's magic, or he's really, I mean, he is nuts. He none of this has to happen. He's already, you know, like mentally not doing well. So I'm just looking through my own notes to see if there's anything else I want to. Oh, here's one that's aged weirdly. He spends about a minute ranting about conspiracies to his secretary, or his, I guess she's his secretary, but yeah, you know, yeah, the conspiracy, yeah, the secretary. Everyone's after me, all of that. I guess a lie in the prologue, which if there is a flaw in this episode, they say it in the prologue, but they don't really like you. It's like you need to remember it from the prologue to inform the rest of the show, which is he's a bachelor and a recluse with few friends, only devotees and adherents to the cause of tart sophistry. So these are the only people he like really interacts with at all, you know?
Yeah.
I am wondering where he was coming from at the beginning of the episode, though. He was driving home. Maybe he just went in a circle. Yeah. I don't know.
I think he's just kind of like, you know, he's created this reality. Like, I think that's part of it. Like, he's decided these are the, I'm not going to have friends. Mm-hmm. I only have admirers. And I'm, because he's above that, you know? That's how it feels. Like all of this is an elaborate show. Like his house is an elaborate show.
Or does he feel that because all of it's an elaborate show that he feels like some kind of a pretender, though he feels like he's not deserving of friends?
Well, I think it's more that he's just really thinks he's better than everyone else.
Yeah, I definitely get that from him.
So
it's not that he doesn't think he's deserving. He thinks they're not deserving of him.
Of him. Right, yeah. Right. That I'm better than all of you,
right.
So I don't need you.
And he also thinks he's better than all of the machines and doesn't need them. Yet he keeps them around, so.
Just for looks.
For appearances.
For appearances' sake.
Yes, I think he should focus on that fantastic dry bar he had that they had a shot of. No machines there. Oh, when I was watching the episode, I was... Here's my ending. The car ending's fantastic, but I was like, oh, he's going to get taken out by a lever and a pulley in the end.
The most basic machines, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I wanted to get to the most... instead, we got to the, you know, some of the most complex of 1960, but whatever. But like I said, I could have gone double length with this. Oh, here's another thing. He said he'd been up for 4 days. That definitely pushes this is all in his head.
I forget about that.
He is hallucinating at this point in any case.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
That's true.
Okay. I had a friend in university who was awake for like 3 days with the flu when someone came to his dorm room and put on the movie Event Horizon. He ended up hiding behind his sofa and is terrified of Sam Neill 25 years later. So,
Wow.
I even like as a joke for my sci-fi film podcast, said, hey, come on and let's do Event Horizon. He's like, no, I will not watch that movie. I'm like, oh, okay. So you stay awake this long. I mean, I wonder
It's not good.
How long has this been going on? Because the repairman, he's like, I do this all the time. And what was his first encounter and how did he handle it? Was the machine like, daddy, and he was like, and you know, make it stop, you know?
That's true. He never indicated they were already talking to him, so I feel like that was a new thing.
Well, you wouldn't really tell people that, would you? Because then they
I
send
suppose
you away.
Wouldn't
so
what was your favorite communication from the machine world?
Well, they all said the same thing.
I guess I should say which rapping did you enjoy the most?
I liked the television because of the crazy dancing woman. I just loved that.
Okay.
Like, it was such a juxtaposition from the message. I don't know.
I'm all about that razor, the way it rose up like a snake in the bathroom and then slunk down the stairs.
Yeah,
it was
very good.
Oh my God. I love it so much.
I actually asked the question though, because for me it actually was the dancer. I was like, that's ridiculous. It's weirdly
was so ridiculous.
And weirdly creepy at the same time. So
yes. I really enjoyed that.
What would you get more creeped out by, going to a typewriter and seeing get out of here your name or all work and no play makes Jack a doll boy?
Either I think would be enough to make me leave immediately.
Yeah.
I'd nope right
yeah,
out.
Yeah. If the typewriter starts sending you messages,
no matter
kind,
what those are,
no,
I'm gone.
Even if it's high.
Yes. Nope. I don't want to talk to you, typewriter. Goodbye.
I did like this actor, and I had a few other actors flash through my head when he's a little more chilled out. I was definitely, well, I already mentioned it made me think of Rowan Atkinson, but he definitely came across in the first half like a really angry Peter Sellers, which I enjoyed. And there's a part when he is screaming at the top of his stairs and goes to commercial. And I was like, man, I would love to see like Fred Armisen, a Saturday Night Live in Portlandia, like remake this episode. That'd be cool. But that was just my own little pipe dream. But I'm just wondering, I felt this guy made me think of like five different actors through the episode. Did you have any takes on that?
I just think it's interesting. I was played so dead serious.
Yeah. Even though like it's kind of goofy.
Even though it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not sure it would work if it was funny.
If you played it funny, like they did with like the baseball episode, then yeah, I don't think it would have worked as well.
Yeah.
It would have, because it would have been the same joke all the way through. And so
it would have felt more tired.
Maybe. Yeah. So playing it straight made it work.
Yeah. And it like definitely brought about the horror element versus the humor element.
Yeah. It's still kind of funny.
And that's why it's such an interesting mashup, because it's like literally ridiculous, but also horrifying.
I guess that's why I was thinking of Evil Dead 2, because that's usually considered as, oh, here's
where
they really fused horror and comedy together. But this is doing a pretty good job of it on TV, you know, 25 years earlier.
Yeah. And it's not even that long of an episode, and it really hammers it home. It does a good job, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
Let me throw out my questions. Won't be a surprise to you anymore, but the first one, who in this episode enters the Twilight Zone? Before I get your answers, I think because of the movie Pleasantville, I thought that TV repairman was going to be like, you know, magical or something, but he's just there for a few minutes and he leaves. So, yeah. I was expecting him to be part of the Twilight Zone, but he was just doing his job. So maybe not him. I don't know. For you, who in this episode went through the Twilight Zone?
Well, Jess Finchley.
He's the only one that's there, right? So
maybe he didn't even.
Maybe it was all in his mind.
Yeah.
His mind went to the Twilight Zone and the rest of him, his body could not handle it.
That's possible.
That's the imposter syndrome. We all think our mind's out to get us, right? But for him. How about his secretary? I mean, I guess she handles things like relatively even keeled. You know, mm-hmm. she kind of stands her ground. I mean, does she like experience this guy's like either insanity or supernatural misfortune?
No.
Okay,
I think maybe her leaving also triggers more anxiety in him.
Sure, because she is like the one connection that he has, and then she leaves him.
And she's like the buffer zone between him and the outside world that is overwhelming him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I am wondering if I go nutty just staying like, I am in this weird situation where I never had to really do like a lockdown. Japan, we didn't, probably because we already kept our distance and wore masks, but we never fully locked down in Japan. There was one week that we did. It was a national holiday for everyone. And I was basically staying at that family farmhouse. I didn't notice. So, but yeah. I know I'm thinking from the weird perspective, but did you get, I assume you had to stay in your house for a while a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, we've been here.
Right.
Yeah,
so
I mean, when the pandemic started, we didn't go much of anywhere for a long time. Several weeks we got. Yeah. And then even still, we things got a little better here for a while. And we started to do a few outdoor gatherings, as long as there weren't too many people. But then we had to cut that out again. So it's semi locked down. Yeah. I mean, we have to go out to get groceries and stuff, but it's not life is not normal.
It's pretty risky here, with the new variant. Yeah.
Yeah. See, where I live, I can walk about 5 minutes. I'm in rice fields. So yeah, I'm very much an outdoor person. Most of the time I spend indoor on like podcasting basically. And sometimes I podcast outdoors, but I was thinking, I don't think I'd turn into this guy, but I imagine I would get grumpier if I didn't leave the house for some time,
it can feel like the walls are closing in on you after you're trapped in the same place for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I, you know, my day, like yesterday, I, get up, have breakfast, wash the dishes. It'd take a 30-minute walk. I just, you know, I want some fresh air, that sort of thing. So, but I, again, I had the blessing of being in relative countryside, you know, in a place where people figured out from the start how not to let it run rampant, I guess. So that helped. Yeah. It's still pretty weird. I came out of the train station Saturday and they had a festival, or a festival just ended. So lots of people were drunk. It was like the first time for a really long time I'd actually seen a lot of people not masking at all. So for me, I'll, you know, like if I'm going indoors, anywhere indoors, I'll like flip it on my face. So, but you don't see people indoors not doing that in Japan. So, yeah. And my daughter here, here's an interesting one. They did online school just as practice last week. She's in junior high now. And I've noticed this with some of my students when they're online too, especially a lot of girls will wear the masks on Zoom, like from home now. So at first, yeah. And, but I get that where a 13-year-old girl maybe is really happy that she gets to cover half of her face.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, so even I played Pokemon Go and you can buy masks for your avatars and people wear them.
Wow. Yeah. So I find it interesting, especially a lot of, you know, kind of like preteen, early teen girls in Japan are like, just will do that. Like I would be talking to you now doing that, but because it does make them feel a little more comfortable now. So interesting.
Sure.
I forgot his name again.
Finchley.
Mr. Bartlett Finchley. Because I want to say Finchy or something else. Yeah, the ch and l are kind of a weird like consonant mix. But does he deserve his trip to the Twilight Zone that ends in a bitter end?
Seems like it.
I feel like, you know,
they want you to. I think they set it up so that they want you to feel he does.
I feel bad for him, though.
I feel a little bad for him, but I don't think the ending is supposed to be like a huge downer. They're just like, look what happened to him.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a great dude.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's not, it doesn't seem like the episode is not very sympathetic toward him.
No, not at all.
No, the like I said, I would have watched this guy get tormented for like one of the season 4 double length episodes. This honestly, I was like, this could have been one of those longer season 4 episodes, and I think it would have, just watching this guy get screwed with for, you know, 30 minutes straight would have been fine. I guess I have a dark sense of humor because I just found this episode really fun.
It is really fun. It's true.
I'm thinking, you know, feeling a little bad for the guy, though. He's a little bit older than the typical male Twilight Zone protagonist. They usually age about 34 to 36. The women on the show that are the leads typically are told to be about 24 to 27, which I find interesting. I think that's a little bit of this, you know, the 50s, like, quote unquote, American dream that hadn't quite fallen, you know, they hadn't noticed yet. So the Twilight Zone notices many things, but not necessarily that.
Yeah, I mean, even as progressive as it was, you know, there's still implicit biases that we all have that we're not even always aware of. And so when you're making media, sometimes those come out and nobody's perfect. And it was still 1960. And so there's still, you know, episodes that have a bit of sexism in them. And
for sure.
Yeah.
But this guy being 48, those extra 10 to 12 years they've added from the standard Twilight Zone age is like, that makes me wonder if, oh, he kind of does deserve it a little more because he's built his life into this. He's spent like a really long time making himself this person that we're enjoying watching being harassed on screen by machines.
You know, it's interesting that you say he was 48 because I've noticed this through a lot of Twilight Zone episodes, but people aged way faster back then. And I would have thought he was like 60 from the way he looks in the episode.
The actor was about 55.
Okay, that's a little closer then.
So they did, for whatever reason, give him a number a little bit under. So let's place this one onto the tripometer then. So as I mentioned, 0 to 5. I'll take interesting sounds. I'll take decimals. Oh, I think I asked Susan first last time. So I got to ask, I asked Tilly first this time for your tripometer rating.
I'm going to give it a 4. It's pretty trippy. They have all these machines that want to get rid of you and or kill you from your house, in your house. You know, it's like, it's your safe place where you're supposed to feel comfortable and all these, you feel anyway, even if it was all in his head, that all of these things are out to get you and they're chasing him around and being creepy as hell. And so, yeah, I'm going to give it a 4.
All right. Susan, where do you want to put it on the tripometer?
I think I'm going to go 3 because like it could technically be a representation of what's happening in his head.
Right.
So versus the ones where it's like, there is no other explanation. This is really happening and it's bonkers.
I see.
So that's why I'm just going to say that.
Okay. See, for me, the in your head part wouldn't necessarily take it down. I mean, I think it's highly interesting that like I said, I like to know how people like rate these things. I'm going to go with the dorky decimal point just because I want to go slightly higher than 4. I'm going to go 4.2. the 0.2 is for the warbly TV, the second time the TV is harassing him.
Okay.
That's an extra 0.2 for this episode, just for weird TV images. So, I think it was the first time I saw this one, and I had a fine time. I actually, usually I do watch these episodes probably 3 or 4 times before doing the podcast. This one I did only watch once, but that's because I kept putting it on and falling asleep, and I don't know why, because it's really good.
Oddly soothing.
Maybe. Well, I think it's also been quite a summer in Japan, so I think the heat is just like melting my brain at the end of the day. One more time, I guess, tell them about your websites, because I knew about what your writing one, but I actually didn't know about the podcasting one. So, hey, even I learned last time.
Okay, we are writers, producers. We run a podcasting company at pennantaudio.com. We write comic things and game stuff, including Star Trek Adventures, role-playing game. And we are writing some TV stuff we can't talk about yet.
Yep.
And we do some comics sometimes.
And all of our stuff can be found
at birdguest.com.
.com. Yes. There's links to all of our work up there if you are curious and would like to check them out.
Yep.
As for this, it's Time Enough Podcast, Time Enough Pod on Twitter and Facebook. And if you want to support us on Patreon, you'll find Podcastius, where we also talk about sci-fi films. And some other folks like to talk about video games. There's a Pokemon podcast, Monster Hunter podcast, and the Game Show, where 4 British guys yell at each other about like obscure video game trivia, which it's quite hysterical. I'm not an avid gamer, but I do listen to it. And yeah, occasionally when they're getting way into the weeds, I'm like, what was it? I was listening to last week where they're like, Pokemons that start with C, and even then they're like, how is anyone that doesn't play Pokemon listening to this? I'm like, well, I guess I am. it was like hearing people making like magical incantations, because I don't know much beyond Charizard, you know. So it was fun, but watch next time you're out on the street, you know, keep an eye behind you for errant cars being driven by guys leaning to the side with a pantyhose on their head.
That's an everyday thing here in LA.
That's right, it happens all the time. Yeah. Probably.
Oh, right. Hey, it's the city of dreams. Is LA the city of dreams? That's somewhere else.
It could be.
You know, maybe it is. Yeah. Sure.
Okay, I've never been to LA. I had a trip once where I hung out in San Francisco, and then we needed to go to Prescott, Arizona. And it was like, do you want to go down through LA or do you want to go up through Death Valley and Las Vegas? And just to end things on a little trek, that's when Star Trek The Experience was still running. So I chose Vegas.
Yeah.
So jealous.
Yeah.
I predict within 10 years, you will live in a push-button world. Piles upon piles of human bodies will be heaped in our thoroughfares as a warning. I predict within 10 years, you will live in a push-button world. Piles upon piles of human bodies will be heaped in our thoroughfares as a warning. I predict full medical attention by vending machine. Having a heart transplant, a hair transplant, or even a brain transplant by vending machine. Have a heart transplant, a hair transplant, or even a brain transplant by vending machine. Piles upon piles of human bodies will be heaped in our thoroughfares as a warning. Embalming by radar, where the body is turned to indestructible stone. Embalming by radar, where the body is turned to indestructible stone. I predict full medical attention by vending machine. Have a heart transplant, a hair transplant, or even a brain transplant by vending machine. Piles upon piles of human bodies will be heaped in our thoroughfare as a warning. Have a heart transplant, a hair transplant, or even a brain transplant by vending machine. Embalming by radar, where the body is turned to indestructible stone. I predict with intent you will live in a push-button world.
I predict within 10 years, you will live in a push-button world.